Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
1-866-823-1077 is the phone number where you can join the conversation. Don King picked up with ammunition at the airport. We'll talk about it next on Bulldog Live.
I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
All right, Penny Dean, how are you today?
Good. Good. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm amused when I saw this story of boxing promoter and Call & Post publisher Don King was stopped at a security checkpoint Sunday evening at Hopkins International Airport, which is I believe out in Ohio, and they found ammunition for a .38 and a .357 in his carry-on luggage, but he was allowed to turn over the ammo to TSA and continue on his flight.
Hold it. How does that happen? Is he extra special?
Yes.
Okay. I just wondered, because the whole thing is, I believe you or I would have been arrested.
I think so.
And probably subjected to an extra formal security check, pat down, with extra grosping and grasping and, you know, all those things that happen.
Yes, exactly.
And so he is special because?
I guess he was on his way to his wife's funeral.
Okay. but here's the thing. I don't think he should have been arrested or charged or anything. But I think if we were on our way to our wife's or husband's funeral, I still think we would have been arrested.
I would certainly think so.
I mean, and so the bottom line is, and he probably honestly forgot it. If you're under grief.
How many times do we hear that? People forget that they left their loaded 38 in the carry-on luggage or something. We hear that a lot.
That I've heard that before, but you know, I believe it. You know,
okay.
I know how it happens. You know, I know that it's. You know, I literally pat myself down before I enter courts. I literally like do the pat down on myself because.
Oh sure.
You know, because I'm like, dude, I leave my knife, my gun. You know, what the heck? You know, and because if you ask me to go for it instantly, I know where it is. But sometimes I forget. Okay, what? Because it's just as much a part of you as checking for who knows what.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's just, so anyway, so the whole thing is he went on his way and I didn't know his wife had passed away.
Well, at least that's what the story says here. The very last paragraph of it says King was in Cleveland Sunday for his wife's funeral services at Mount Olivet Institutional Baptist Church.
Oh my God.
So, wow.
Yeah, that's just a... That's a very sad thing. Like I said, I was unaware of that.
Yeah, well, but still, I mean, my goodness, it still doesn't give the excuse as to why he was just allowed to hand it over and pass on, you know?
Yeah, because, and that's something I've always said, is that everybody should be treated equally. And everybody, quite frankly, isn't, and I think it's a very sad thing.
But that's why we're doing strip searches of three-year-olds, for crying out loud, at the airports, is to treat everybody equally.
You know what? That's exactly... Because, you know, those three-year-olds, they've been known to smuggle cocaine in their diaper. I know that they've been known. They might have cocaine for later use, you know. they want to make sure they can stay up all night and terrorize mom and dad.
Right, exactly. Rush the cockpit door, no less.
Yeah, because some of those are precocious. You've heard about the terrible twos, haven't you?
my 2-year-old's starting to come out of it now.
Oh man. And you're just like, oh my God, terrorist, you're like, take this kid for 1 year, right? They just
she can teach them something.
And isn't it funny the things to learn? What's the first word they learn? No, right?
Right.
Isn't it amazing? You try and teach them to say mama and daddy. First word out of their mouth, no.
Yep. Go to bed. Nope. Eat your food. Nuh-uh.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But by golly, anything else, they're going to learn those words.
That's right. Well, anyway, what are we going to talk about today here on Second Amendment Tuesday?
Here's what we're going to talk about. Two things.
Okay.
We're just going to talk briefly about Terry stops. We had a couple people comment on Terry stops. And I just want to, you know, I had lawyer friends say, the Terry stop, you've got to tell them about Terry v. Ohio. I said, you want me to tell them about the legal theory or the reality? And they, of course, roll their eyes and they go, okay, you're right. And Terry v. Ohio was a very famous case. It's a 1968 case. It was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. And it's the Fourth Amendment case. We're talking about, you know, where the police officers stop you and talk you and stop and frisk and all that type of thing. And basically it held that the Fourth Amendment prohibition on unreasonable searches and seizures wasn't violated when a police officer stops a suspect on the street and searches him without probable cause to arrest if the police officer has a reasonable suspicion that the person has committed, is committing, or is about to commit a crime. Now, how nebulous is that?
Mm-hmm.
Is about to commit a crime. And so people always ask about the standard. And last week, we had a couple of listeners call or write in and say, you need to tell them about Terry v. Ohio. And I said, well, yeah, it's a protection out there, but it's really a theoretical protection. Unfortunately, other than it allows us sometimes to suppress stops, in cases, in generally, it's just not enough practical protection for people on the street. You know, because that bit of if an officer has reasonable suspicion, person has committed, is committing, or is about to commit a crime. How do you know that I'm about to commit a crime?
Right, right.
How do you know that? Nobody knows that unless you're ESP. Who's those people you call for 1-800 and they tell you everything?
Oh,
you know, unless they're the 1-800 tell you everything. That's it, but I just wanted to do that. But our talk for today is, why do we need a second gun? People say, if you carry one gun, why do you need a second gun? And there's stories every day about why you need a second gun, but I found this interesting story that is just a paragraph I want to read to the readers, and it was found in the December 2010 Armed Citizen, which is the American Hunter article in an NRA magazine. And it said, two female joggers were enjoying a morning run when three dogs viciously attacked them. Blood-curdling screams rang out. Onlookers dialed 911. Gary Paik knew there was no time. He grabbed his 9mm handgun and ran to the scene. One of the women was on the ground, and there were three dogs trying to pull her apart, he said. I shot the dog, and he just dropped. The other dog stopped and then continued to attack her. Paik's gun malfunctioned. But neighbor John Betancourt arrived with a .45 caliber and shot the two remaining dogs. The most badly injured jogger was taken to hospital with serious but not life-threatening injuries. The armed citizen probably saved your life, and this happened in Fairfield, California on 9/11, ironically, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But the lesson that I want everyone to learn is, I don't know anything about Mr. Gary Paik, nothing about him whatsoever. And we're going to give him the presumption that he properly maintained and regularly checked his firearm. But firearms are mechanical objects. They can break at any given time, like a car. Think about your best-maintained car, how it breaks sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a prime example of why a person, some people carry two or three guns, and other people say, well, gee, that's really excessive. What, you carry one gun and you're going to carry two or three? But the question is, in this particular case, his neighbor came out and shot the other two dogs, and the women were injured, but they were okay. What if this had been someone attacking him? What if this had been someone attacking his family? You know, what about the situation where he absolutely needs this firearm, and it was out of commission after one shot? And people say, well, gee, that doesn't happen that often. And my answer is, yes, it does. You know, it happens more than you think. And there,
happened to me. Yeah, you know, in practice shooting. Yeah, absolutely. I had. Oh, gee, what happened here? You know, I just bought this thing, which goes back to what you talked about a few weeks ago. Yeah, you buy a new gun, fire off about 250 rounds first
of the ammunition you plan to carry in it.
Yeah,
and people say, oh my God, ammunition right now is pretty expensive.
Yep.
And so if you take carry ammo, be it Hornady, be it HydroShock, be you know whatever type of or brand of ammunition you choose to carry, it is quite expensive. But I tell them the insurance costs money, and you don't see race car drivers that are running around the track on these tires and literally putting their life on those tires until they've checked those tires out several times. And it's the same way with the ammunition and the firearm you're going to carry is really, really life-saving, and we have to look at whether or not it's properly maintained. And that gets to the next part of this, is that signs, you know, you want to have, people have signs around their house, and we've seen these great signs, and I have to confess that I have some of them, but I don't recommend my clients have them.
Okay.
One is that comes up when you come up my stairs is nothing in this house is worth dying for. It's a great metal sign. It's at the top of my stairs. If you come in from my basement, there's this big metal sign that says nothing in this house is worth dying for.
Yeah, and these things float around the internet, too. Yeah.
They're great. And I have a sign in my backyard, and this is a heavy-duty metal sign in a pole, and it says Castle Doctrine practiced here. Isn't that a great sign?
I love it.
And then my favorite sign of all is on my bedroom door. It's hung on there in big letters, okay? And one of my clients saw this sign for me and said, I have to buy this for my lawyer. And her brother said, you're going to buy this for your lawyer? And she says, no, she'll love it. And he's like, this is a good lawyer. So the gist of it is, it's this big sign that says, if you can read this, you're in range. And it has a scope reticle.
Oh, gee.
So it's like, I tell people is these type of signs are fun, and I love them. They're great signs.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say that I know the huge risk I'm taking. And here's the risk that I think I'm reasonably taking. If goodness forbid some bad person ever breaks into my house and I'm forced to defend my life, and they decide to charge me, which I always presume I would get charged, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're in my house, I did everything right. I presume I'll get charged. Do you think they're not going to take those signs as evidence or take pictures of them and say, look, she was this trigger-happy, looking for a gunfight?
If not in the criminal case, certainly in the civil case, that would almost certainly follow.
That's exactly right. You know, in other words, and I tell people, do I love these signs? Yeah. Do I think they're fun? Yeah. But one of my clients happened to be here, and he said, you made me take my signs like that down. I said, that's because they're hugely risky. And he says, so wait a minute. So you can have these signs, and I can't. I said, you can have them. But if something bad happens and a jury sees them and they think ill of you for them, don't say I didn't warn you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't. And it's really sad that we have to think that way, because I think a jury should say, gee, where can I get one of those signs? You know, this is a great sign.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is a great sign. Where did you get that? I'd like to purchase one as well. But I think we have to be realistic in that not everyone on a jury may be pro-firearm, and they might not even be neutral. They might be, you know, actively sometimes one of Sarah Brady's friends.
Yes.
And so we look at those signs and we say, you know, now I have mine in my backyard, not in my front yard. You know, because the other thing I think, and this is my other concern, is my thought is if you put these signs in your front yard or where they're really visible, okay, it really advertises that you're a firearm owner. And in my mind, it says, come rob my house when I'm not here.
Because, yeah, mm-hmm.
You know,
that makes sense.
Yeah, think about it. What type of person would purchase one of these signs? Obviously, a firearm owner, a person in general, a person who believes in self-defense.
Right.
And so if they can see, you know, that maybe the newspapers are piling up and you've been gone for 2 or 3 days, with the crazy world we live in, I think that's an invitation to rob.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. And the first thing that they would go looking for are the firearms.
Absolutely, because they're going to say, look at this person's signs. This is absolutely the type of things. And they're easy. Now, in my particular case, you know, most of my firearms are fence-proof.
They're what?
They're fence-proof. You know how you go to a fence and you fence your stolen goods?
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Most of my firearms are fence-proof. You know why?
I'm afraid to ask.
Most of them I've had powder-coated in Revlon number 19 neon pearl pink.
Pink, yes.
And so think about it. If you're a fence, you're going to go like, and where am I going to get rid of these? You know, I've had my suppressors done pink. And so my thing is, think about it. I figure it this way. Even the dumbest fence is going to say, these are too hot for me to handle. You need to take these to some other fence, because there's no way in heck these aren't going to stand out.
I got you. 1-866-823-1077. If you wish to ask Penny Dean a question about your Second Amendment rights, you can do so right here on Bulldog Live with Second Amendment Tuesdays as we continue here on The Pulse.
Bulldog Live will continue after these messages live on The Pulse.